Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Brother 22 Roundtable Podcast on a Saturday. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and we're going to talk Legacy Watch today, as well as what's been happening on the Big Brother 22 live feeds. With me, special guest, very special guest, we have the wonderful Cammy. How are you doing, Cammy?
I'm great. Okay, so I'm happy to be here, but I'm also happy to be talking Big Brother, so it's exciting.
Yes, very excited. Also with me today is Puya. How you doing, Puya?
I'm doing good, Taryn. Last we spoke, we left in a good place. You gave me a title that I didn't want. My mentions blew up with Nipple King Puya, which was very awkward. But we're here on a Saturday night to talk people's legacies, tarnish some legacies, and praise some legacies. So, you know, I'm here for all of that kind of stuff. So I'm very excited as well. Also, yes. Tammy's here, which I couldn't have asked for. I've been with two of the only two great BB21 players in my books, Ovi and Kemi now. So I'm not a mad guy. Not a mad guy at that.
I feel like Ovi just overshadows me. Like, Ovi's so, like, technical and so, like, analytical. And I'm just like, listen, this season is trash. Like,
yes. Puya, do you swear on Ovi that that's the truth, that you were telling the truth just now?
That's some heavy stuff. And I would have to say yes. Big time.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. All right. I think we're having some slight YouTube problems again, but that's fine. Uh-oh. It'll get figured out. Yes, we are here to talk about everything that's been going on these Big Brother 22 live feeds. Puya, I do want to say that I believe you gave yourself the Nipple King nickname. I believe.
So you said as the main judge of nipples,
yes,
and RHAP.
I was trying to go for nipple judge. You took it a step further.
Well, if I'm going to be nipple anything, I might as well be the king of it. Like, if I'm going to have a title in the nipple department, give me like the head title, right? I mean, I think that's the move, but yeah, it's a thing I'm going to live with now, at least for the rest of the season. So we'll see how I feel after this.
Poor Kemi.
I had a last feed update this morning, and like, I think I hopped on right when Puya was saying Tyler has perfectly circular nipples, and I was like, oh.
Okay. Yeah, it was just because, like, you know, Taryn usually ends the day with, he gives a courtesy to the guests of, hey, is there anything that's been on the feeds that you want to bring up that hasn't brought up? And I'm like, this is a situation where I know that a lot of the talk was kind of nipply last night. So let me just put this on here, because I know a lot of people have joked about it online. Little did I know, it would come back to bite me more than anyone else. So,
what version of Twitter are you on? Because my Twitter wasn't talking about nipples.
So it was two parts of Twitter. One part was, well, good night, everyone. The season was fun. Catch you next year. It's over. BB Can 9. Here we go. It's the BB Can 9 Express. And the other half was, so this has been the night. There's no plans. No one's talking because Memphis doesn't want to talk. And Enzo and Cody compared nipples. And I was like, well, okay, those are things to know. That's when I went to bed, and then I woke up the next morning and caught up with everything.
I'm just glad we didn't end up talking about the bathroom problems that that people have been having there. That
is not a department I want.
It's another topic of conversation.
Yeah, we good. We're fine.
All right. Well, this is what's been happening this week. We got an HOH winner. It is Memphis, who has won the puzzle HOH. Seemingly his back troubles are no more here. Kemi, how have you felt about Memphis this season?
You know what? Memphis is on my draft. So, you know, I'm very competitive and I like to win. So, you know, as much as you can say about Memphis, he's on my draft. So.
He's on my draft. What do you want me to say? Do you get points if he wins HOH?
I hope I get
money. Or is it a must win?
I'm hoping for some cash. Like, honestly, I don't know. Like, I didn't want to see him win another HOH. Actually, his last HOH was kind of fun. Like, I liked that week. But I didn't want to see him win another HOH because I hate when people that I don't want to see succeed, like, get comp wins under their belt. Like, then you have to give them credit for things. And it's like, it's all back to, like, Jackson last year. It's like, you know, I didn't want to see him win, but I also knew he was, like, good, like, the best out of everyone there. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I don't really – I wanted to see Davon win, and if anyone in that alliance was going to win, I wanted to see probably Tyler or Nicole win because I felt like Tyler would probably do something and Nicole would defer to Danny. So, I don't know. I didn't want to see Memphis win, so.
Yeah. He did win, though, Puya, and he had a plan.
He did. The plan was undisclosed for many moons, many hours. It was for Memphis and Memphis only because, as we know...
It's a secret plan.
Yeah. Memphis is subscribes to the Titanic strategy, which is loose lips sink ships, and he's not trying to have any ships sink. So his way is, I'm just not going to talk to any of you. I know what I want to do. You just got to follow my lead. And all you need to know is that the committee's safe. You know what? I'm gonna blame Julie Chen on this one. She really manifested this committee. She manifested the Memphis train. Memphis is masterminding things, and look at what's going on now. Memphis at the helm, steering this ship, clear away from the iceberg. But I think all of us wanted the iceberg. I think all of us wanted that Memphis ridiculous HOA train of the second week. But the biggest problem there is that in that second week, there were two people that everyone else wanted gone that he was like, no, I can work with them. And then this week, it's like, well, there's three people we don't want you really to be looking at. And he's like, well, no, I don't like any of them. I don't trust them. It's committee till the end. And that's where we are now. The plan, of course, being it's going to be Kevin, Davon, and David in the mix.
Mm.
Yeah, if you don't have anything nice to say, like maybe you shouldn't say anything at all.
I know Julie's been teaching me these things, but I'm tardy to the lessons. I don't keep notes. I just come through getting C minuses, barely passing. So,
yeah. Julie really is, I think, a role model for everyone. If only we could aspire to her level of ascendance. Yeah, this is how I usually get people to go on podcasts too, right, Kemi? I just say, hey, I've got a plan. It's going to happen on a Saturday. I'm not going to tell you about what it's about, but I want you to show up 9 p.m. Okay.
Okay.
See, it works. It's an effective strategy. There it is.
If you're HOH, I feel like if I was HOH, I would kind of take a similar, like, I wouldn't be so direct about it, but I'd be like, I would just be placating everyone. Like, yeah, you know, just agreeing to everything, smiling and saying yes, and then do whatever I want. But I probably wouldn't tell everyone exactly what I wanted. So I kind of like this, but he's just too aggressive about it.
Yeah. I also like this idea that so ultimately he's going to put up Davon and Kevin. And then later he's going to reveal that the ultimate plan is to backdoor David. And it's just like, okay, hold on. So the big secret, the big plan that you had going is that you are going to backdoor David, the guy that you've been after all season. That was the secret. That was the big, couldn't let that one get out. couldn't let people know about that.
Yeah, we're out here acting like you have this grand plan, and all you've really done is take the longer route. It's like it's the same destination it always was, but you just ended up missing an exit and you went all the way around to get back to where you were anyways. It makes no sense. It really doesn't. And I feel like it was a lot of extra stuff in between that he didn't need to do, like the old handshake, the old agreement that he went through with David. Up until he revealed this, I was like, you know what? I hate that this is happening, but it makes sense with everything else that's been set up for him to do this. And then only to find out that this is the case, which, hey, dummy, if this is your plan, maybe share it with a couple of people. Maybe let them know that this is what you want to do so that not everyone doesn't start thinking, hey, Memphis has got a brain to him in our alliance. Look at that. He won two comps for us, and now he's controlled. This is good. This is a hot mess. And yeah, I mean, should I have expected anything more from Memphis? The answer is no.
What do you mean? He's been pre-gaming with Dan. So I feel like Dan probably, you know, taught him some tricks.
Right. How come, according to the rumors, Derek is so much better at pre-gaming than Dan? This just doesn't seem right to me.
I think that ultimately it comes down to what kind of student did you have in your class? I feel like Cody would be the type of student with, you know, the little pens and pencils and the ruler all in like a nice straight line shape in the corner of the desk. Memphis comes through, his shirt's half untucked, his hair's all messy, he's barely awake. He's sitting in the back of the class, leaning against the wall with his chair. That's the type of student Memphis would be. So I feel like Memphis doesn't seem like... And then David is the type of student that just bunks school and just goes, you know, doing hooky, just like ditches class for the day. That's kind of how the three students would be here.
See, I feel like Memphis is the kid in the back of the class that also like raises his hand a lot to be like, well, actually, teacher. Yeah. So what we get here is that Memphis is going to tell the veto players, Tyler, Nicole, and Danny, I need you all to throw the veto so that Davon or Kevin or myself win the veto. And then the plan is going to be to backdoor David. They just competed. The feeds just came back from the veto competition. Lo and behold, Tyler did not throw the veto. He won the veto. Danny also came very close to it was Tyler followed by Memphis. Danny was 10 seconds behind Memphis. And Memphis was very grumpy about this, Kemi.
I mean, what isn't Memphis grumpy about? Like, I feel like Memphis is just like, he's one of those guys that if everything doesn't go his way, then it's like nothing went his way. Like, you want HOH, like, calm down. You still get to pick the replacement and they're going to listen to you. So yeah, I don't hope they listen to him. I just hope that, you know, I hope we get an exciting week, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so right away, Memphis is, he's grumpy. He talks to Tyler and Tyler is already giving him just like, he's trying to give a little bit of pushback. He's already talked to Cody about this plan. Cody, who was never told about this plan. And Cody was like, that's dumb. We're not getting out David. Win the veto. We'll talk to Memphis about not using it. And so Tyler kind of threw out this idea like, I mean, maybe we shouldn't use it. And Memphis was like, I just don't understand why you want it in the first place. If we're thinking about it, like, why is Danny even trying to win this thing? I just wanted to backdoor David. That's all I wanted to do. But I know, I mean, I guess if everyone's flipping, then well, I guess, I mean, that's fine. It just, you know, pisses me off, but that's fine. And so Tyler talked to him. Cody talked to him. Christmas talked to him. As of right now, the veto is not going to be used, and Davon will be the target with, as of right now, 4 locked in votes against her: Tyler, Cody, Enzo, and Christmas, which is enough to send Davon home over Kevin. That looks like it's going to be the plan here for the week.
When's the neighbor coming in? Because I feel like the neighbor needs to like knock on the door, open the door, like push Davon back in, and he walks out. Like, I just don't.
Could you imagine Devon walking out like in as she did in the GIF that's very famous? She's like trying to walk out, and then I don't know. Rachel Riley's just like, nope, shelves her back in.
That's what needs to happen. It's going to be Rachel Riley with her bump. It's just going to pump her back in. That needs to happen.
I told you I could play comps while pregnant.
No, it's going to be Rachel's bump with Alyssa at the side.
Alyssa, I've got you support. So what happened is that during the veto competition, they were visited by Zingbot. Now, my theory was that the neighbor was going to be Zingbot. So when I heard that Zingbot was there, I was like, okay, it's got to be Zingbot, right? But Julie said Thursday. This is obviously for a Wednesday episode, a veto episode. So it's possible that it wouldn't be Zingbot, although I think it's super coincidence that, you know, there's a legendary neighbor that's going to come on Thursday. And oh, just so happens to be that Zingbot's there also on Wednesday. And it just makes so much sense to me that Zingbot would be zinging them from a balcony above them. He's obviously not going to be amongst them, right? With COVID. So I feel like maybe they're just going to bring Zingbot back for the HOH competition. That's my theory, Puya.
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, this is the type of year, the type of situation we're in where you might as well double down on a Zingbot situation. If they don't go the Zingbot route, I could see it being a sexy Uncle Vito type person who he's been in many characters for us. He'll be something else again. That's certainly possible. The minute they said legend and everyone's like, oh my God, it's going to be one of the greats. I'm like, listen, it's either going to be someone that's not a player or it's going to be James Hewling. We are not going to win this battle. It's going to be someone that I do not subscribe to as a legend. That's just going to be like, well, hello. And it's like, well, I didn't need you to jump out of a garbage can. I really didn't need that for a Thursday. Whatever it is, I think I got to imagine it's not going to be like the next twist. Like it's not a suite. It's not a basement. It's not of that vein. I feel like it might just be a one and done with the HOH comp potentially. I don't know. The way they advertise it is weird because it's kind of like middle of the two. I don't think it's a fully fledged next twist in the game, but it's also not just a one and done potentially.
Yeah. Kemi, do you have any theories?
Not really. I mean, I honestly think it's going to be an alum that lives in the LA area. Production's not creative. They don't think outside the box. So I feel like it's really going to be like an alum that's in the LA area, or it's going to be someone via Zoom. Like it's going to be something like not too spectacular. So, but that's just my thoughts. Like I know they're not creative. So.
Yeah. So I saw an interview with Julie where she gave, I think, I don't remember where it was from, but she basically said that it's a legend from Big Brother that even new viewers would know about, which again pointed me to one of these sort of just characters, right? Like not like an actual player, because if they're new to like this season or last season, who would they know?
Watch it be Cat.
if it's person in human form, I could see Cat. If they're going person in robot form, maybe Robot Sam comes back or Robot somebody comes back potentially. Could it be the squirrel that kidnapped a bunch of people in 21? Is that a thing that's gonna happen? I don't even know anymore. I'm just like, let me just wait and see in Thursday. But yeah,
I'm sorry, I
realized it as I said it. I was like, I don't need to be taking Kemi down memory lane right now. This is not good memories. So
I'm still trying to figure out if I'm going to sue them for workers' comp. Like I hit my head on the sink. Like honestly, yeah,
that was not okay.
Bad squirrel. Mm-hmm. Squirrel. Man, I can't even do it. Squirrel. Squirrel.
Squirrel.
Squirrel. Squirrel.
That Boston accent.
No, it's a Jason
Roy accent.
Which I don't, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, so as of right now, it's looking like Devon will be going home here. Devon, who has not had a good week here so far. Nicole had a plan last week to obscure the votes, to blame David on some on flipping, essentially, against Devon and Kevin to vote to keep Tyler. And the plan worked very well. Devon is fully convinced that David, in fact, did flip against her, and has not been pleased with David here over the last few days. Pooja.
No, it definitely not. The plan has worked to, you know, amazing results for them, because it doesn't help the combination of the plan, the seed of doubt that was already in between them, and then the fact that David, for the life of him, cannot just tell you what you want to hear in the way that anyone would answer it. It's always got to be some kind of like show of like, I can tell you once, I can tell you twice, but if I tell you now, do you think I'll be nice? Like, just say I voted the way you think I voted, and that means I voted out Tyler. Just say that. And he can't do that, and that's caused this push, this like friction, to become worse and worse, to the point where like it just got to this point of like, I don't think there's any return. Doesn't matter how we want to look at it. Like, it's from the outside looking in, it's obvious like it's a 5v3, but now it's kind of like a 5v2v free agent, which is why a lot of these people are going to go to bat to try and keep the block the same, because David looks like he has nobody at this point, because they've built it to become that way now.
Yeah. Kemi, you obviously played with David. You had your own experiences with him. How do you feel about this situation?
I mean, I feel horribly for Devon, because, you know, I feel like in these situations, you're already paranoid. You're already like, she's already worried about looking dumb. She doesn't want to look dumb. And David is putting, or this situation is putting her in a position where she could potentially look dumb. So she'd rather err on the side of caution. And I would be the exact same way. So like, I would rather stick with my gut than go out on a limb for someone who I've already seen, you know, not act in the way that I feel as though they should be acting. So, I mean, me, if I was Devon, I would probably feel the same way. Like, I'm a cynic though. So I am always going to think that everyone is lying to me. So, and I've spoken with Devon about this, like after my season, like I told her, like, I hate like feeling like someone like pulled the wool over on my eyes. And she's like, I'm the exact same way. Like, I'd rather think about things 500 times before I even believe what's at face value. So I understand it. It's unfortunate that, you know, everyone's telling the truth in that three, and, you know, no one's believing anyone. But I mean, I don't know. I understand why it's hard for some people to watch, but for me, it's entertaining, because, you know, I can put myself in the situation and I know I would be acting the same way. So, yeah.
Well, do you feel like it's the right call though to like, because I get the suspicion, but do you feel like she's maybe being like a little harsh given the fact that she doesn't know for sure?
She is being a little harsh given that she doesn't know for sure, but at the same time, like, I remember, I think it was like week two in Big Brother 21. I just walked by and I overheard the tail end of a conversation between Jack and Nicole, and I was convinced they were working together. I'm like, no one will ever be able to convince me otherwise. So like, I know that when you're in there, like just tiny, tiny things can like cement your view on something. And she already has his entire past season that was literally just last year that, you know, she already had, you know, everyone has their opinions formed of everyone in that house. So, you know, I understand it, and I see why it could be frustrating for some people, but like, I know that I would feel the same way if I was her. So I completely get it.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to be able to ever sort of repair this? I mean, if Devon goes home this week, it seems unlikely at this point. But if she does somehow stay and it's Kevin that goes, do you think they'll be able to reconcile at this point? Do you think she'll ever be able to believe him, or do you feel like it's just going to be this is a done deal at this point?
You mean like be friends or
just like be able to trust each other and like find out essentially that David wasn't lying, that he was telling the truth? Or let's say she finds out because somebody tells her, or like the truth gets out. Like, where do you think that relationship goes from there?
I feel like if it was me, like, I feel like Devon and I are a lot alike. So I feel like she would probably be like, well, I mean, why couldn't he just say that?
You're totally right. That's exactly what she would do.
I feel like he's always talking in circles, and like it's hard when someone's always speaking in metaphors to just be like, all right, get to the point, like just tell me something. So I don't see them being friends in the real world.
All right. Well, it did have some game ramifications here, as Puya, you mentioned that it gives the rest of the house a lot of reason to want to keep David in the game, because they feel like David is now out on an island by himself, not trusted by his allies. It's a reason that they're using to argue that the veto should not be used and that he should not be backdoored and not go home. What we're seeing here, as I said, Kevin and Devon up on the block here. I do think, Puya, that Kevin and David could easily reconcile, actually, that if the real concern was to keep two people in the game that wouldn't be able to work well together, that Devon wouldn't be the right choice to leave here, that Kevin is actually the potential glue. And I think Kevin, without Devon there, absolutely could and I think will work with David.
I agree. Then ultimately, the reason this is probably unlikely to be thought of by the house guests is because, as much as like someone like Cody, who's literally from the minute Memphis won, was literally getting, he said, getting out David would be a waste of a week. And it's because we know that he thinks he's going to be able to take David in. However, the same worry is there for if Devon stays in the house, that is someone that Nicole and Danny can take. And this is where, you know, Terrence talked about how he likes the strategy of the game. This is all end game preparation mode now. Now they've pretty much gotten through the hard part of the game for them, which was coming down to the numbers they have. And it's a matter of who's going to collect the pieces left behind from not from the original alliance to get something going, get the coalition ready. And by getting rid of Kevin, yes, David has nowhere to run. But also, Devon is now firmly going to go that way to Danny and Nicole, potentially, is what they believe. So that makes it that they're both gaining numbers, whereas this way, they believe they're gaining one number. Obviously, should David win the HOH, should Kevin win the HOH, the other is safe. That's fine for them. They could work together. But I think that for that reason, that's why they're not going to look at getting rid of Kevin while Devon's sitting on the block, specifically because they think that they would not have Devon moving forward.
Yeah. And it's a situation, Cody has mentioned basically that if Devon is with Nicole and Danny, then let's say Cody ends up on the block next to Nicole. Now there's a vote in the house to keep Nicole versus if he was up against Nicole and Dan and David was in the house or Kevin was in the house, he may have a vote to keep him versus the one where Devon is just definitely going to keep Nicole. So he wants to make sure that he has the house stacked in his favor moving forward. And it also, like, for some of these people, it actually doesn't matter if David and Kevin work together moving forward. It's just a matter of like which pieces are there and making sure that Devon is not there to work with Nicole and Danny. So it's definitely another case of just Cody probably getting his way this week, Kemi.
I feel like it's going to be Cody or Memphis that wins this game. Like, it's just, I'm so tired. Like, I'm exhausted. I'm bored. Like, I just don't want to watch anymore because I mean, we know about the pregame alliances, and then like it ends up working out. Like, no one wants to see that. I don't. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I just tweeted this out. It feels to me like this season has been Cody won the first HOH, and then he never stopped being HOH.
Yeah,
that's been the season.
You know that saying where it's like it was written. Like, I feel like it was written for Cody. So by Grunner.
I mean. I mean, he's playing very well. I mean, he has managed to basically get his way every single week. The committee has won basically every single HOH, and I think the cause of a lot of people's dismay at the season is that you're used to seeing multiple people win HOH when this season it's mostly been Cody, which really shouldn't be that surprising to people considering this is basically what happened in 16.
Very similar, very similar. And, you know, that is the season that gets given to a lot of house guests before shows start, you know, for a reason. This has become probably the biggest blueprint move in the game since 16 is find you your group, lock it down early, and just control from the jump. And it gets hard because obviously in different seasons, different situations, we were very close. We were very close to 1 point away for Janelle to win one, right? We were this little bit away from Davon winning that one that Christmas did. So one or two forks in the road could have caused enough of a rift that other things would have happened. But when the same group keeps winning and keeps reassuring one another that we're going to keep each other safe, it's hard for them not to take that deal. And it, but you know, as a result, it's going to get hard for us to actively root for this with a more optimistic lens of, hey, something unpredictable could happen. Because when it comes to, you know, talking about the show, watching the show, consuming the show, watching the feeds, which I want to talk about in a second, there's nothing quite worse than the feeds coming on after 3 hours of being off at midnight, only for you to know exactly what's going to happen at the end of the week, because you want that little bit of wild factor. You want that, I don't know what's going to happen. But also, Taryn, and I know that this wasn't prompted or asked, but I need to speak on it. Can we talk about why, like the fact that we have been getting feeds cut left, right, and center, and how I feel like that is really robbing me of some of the stuff, some of the essence of the show that I'm here for. It's really making it difficult because not only am I not getting the full picture, not only am I getting, you know, the good, the bad, give me everything. I saw it's Big Brother. Big Brother is a reference made to 1984. Your Big Brother's always watching. Why am I not always watching? Why are you not letting me watch? I needs it. And it's not like Canada where it's like, well, sponsors are paying. We're giving you the feeds for free. We do what we want. We be paying. So give me my dividends. What's going on?
You know damn well what's going on, Puya. Big Brother 21 happened. They said yes. That delay is happening. We don't need any more headlines. And if we're going to get headlines, it can't be about anything like controversial. So.
Yeah. I think that's exactly it. I mean, this is something I've pointed out that like basically every confrontation this season has not been on the feeds. The only confrontation we saw was the one that Christmas had with Davon and Bailey. I don't know why that one of all the ones was on. I'm surprised we didn't, you know, the feeds didn't start cutting as soon as voices were raised. But every other one, the feeds are cut for. And on top of that, anytime they talk about the confrontations, the feeds are cut. That whole scene that we saw on the episode with Ian and Danny was enough of a confrontation, and maybe it was more than that, for all we know, that the feeds were cut for the entirety of it. Anytime somebody said, Ian and Danny, feeds cut.
The earthquake stuff on, like, being discussed. Because I saw on Twitter that I guess people pinpointed how much of a delay there was in feeds by the earthquake. It's like 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And it's like, that's a long time.
Honestly, I'm surprised it's not more.
Me too. I thought it was like 7 minutes.
Like, I'm surprised it's not like 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Like nobody would know the difference unless there's an earthquake. And like at least that, like, I honestly, I would almost prefer it, because then they're not going to like instinct cut all the time. You know, they can like be a little more precise about it. Like, look, if you're going to cut the feeds, there's nothing I can do about it. At least don't cut feeds when you don't need to. Right. But yeah, two and a half minutes. I'm honestly surprised it's that short.
Yeah.
I don't know. Leave it up to Mother Nature to be like the feedster's like deep throat and all of this.
Yeah. called out by the earth. It's been such an issue, and it's not just the confrontations either, because quite honestly, I don't care that much. Like, I've never been the person to watch the show for the fights. Right. What I do care about is the talking about the fights afterward, because that's usually strategically relevant. And what I do care about is that it's not just the fights that are being cut. It's also strategic conversations. On Friday, yesterday, there were multiple conversations that Memphis was having, that Nicole and Danny were having, where the feeds would just cut in the middle of them, and then we'd miss the entire like one-on-one between, like, we saw Memphis propose a deal to David accepted, and then was like, and now I want to tell you about this, and then the feeds cut for the rest of that conversation, which was like a good, you know, at like 10 minutes or so. Like that's so relevant, considering the fact that Memphis comes away not necessarily because of that conversation, but certainly comes away from that conversation still wanting to backdoor David that week. I'm with you, Puya. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. And like, honestly, that's the thing. At the core of the show, it was, you know, it's a social experiment, and I'm with you. Some of the ugliness, some of the arguments, I have a hard time digesting. I'll watch them, and I'll kind of like watch them to myself. I'll try not to like tweet anything about it, because like it's too much. I get angered. But then at its core, it does have game ramifications. It has social ramifications. There's so many informative, important dialogues that came out of that one confrontation they gave us this season with the Christmas v. Bailey and Davon that we got. That had a lot of good conversation that came out of it, a lot of educational stuff that came out of it to teach people, bring people notice on stuff. And then beyond that, talking about the other stuff that they've been removing, it just starts, at what point should we just rename the name of the show? Because if Big Brother is supposed to be, we see everything, we're always watching, I'm watching sometimes at this point. And it's like, you can't leave the show with like, remember, Big Brother is sometimes watching, because that's not what the essence of the show is. That's not the way I've agreed to do this. You have them all sign papers. These are all stars. They know what they're signed up for. They know what happens when you make mistakes, when you say things. They should be held. They should show everything, so that they should be held to what they're doing. It's on them, because, you know, since BB15, was it? They've added the thing at the beginning of the show, like, these house guests, this is not our words. So you've already signed yourself off of like, we're just the vehicle. These are the people. Blame the people if anything goes down. Let us see everything. And then whatever happens, that's on them. But don't rob your audience of the show, the flow of the narrative, what's going on. Because then we know in the edit, you're going to try and give what you believe to be the juiciest part of the steak, when in fact, some of it is going to be missing pieces that will never fully tell us what's going on. Obviously, I'm sounding like I have the biggest wish list in the world. I know that this is not a thing that's going to happen. But I'm in a position where I feel like I'm holding the feeling stick and I can share my feelings. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Yes. And let me make a case on a practical standpoint, to go full cynical here and just talk about practicalities for the producers of Big Brother that are obviously watching this podcast, it's dumb to cut so much. Like, it's one thing to think, okay, let's avoid bad headlines, let's cut anything controversial. Like, that's one thing. If that's your strategy, then don't cut so much other stuff. Because if you cut so much other stuff, then it draws the draws people's attention to the fact that you're cutting so much stuff. And it makes more and more people upset that you're cutting so much stuff. And the only reason people can think about why you're cutting so much stuff is to hide the controversial stuff. So you're just drawing more and more attention to it. So be more precise if this is your goal. Don't be randomly cutting feeds for 3 hours after the episode. Don't be cutting feeds for 4 hours a night, every night. Be more precise with this. If this is your goal, you can do it better. Is what I'm saying here.
Yes.
Also, yes. Don't cut controversial stuff, but that's another thing.
Yeah. Again, the more you cut, the more detectives come out the woodwork. The more people come out with the magnifying glass of, let me see why this was cut. What was said? Oh, this is a thing that they might be hiding. Okay. I see you. That's a problem. Okay. That's a problem. I'm not seeing that. Like, I figure yourself out. Okay. You need to figure yourself out. You're grounded. Go to your room and think about what you've done, because I am not happy with what you're doing.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Another thing we did see on the feeds yesterday was the Wise Guys. Kemi, are you? How do you feel about the Wise Guys?
Sexism in America. I'm joking. I just feel like, isn't it like that one name for like three different alliances?
Yes. So Memphis has made a final two with Cody. That one's called the Commission. But within that final two, now he is making a final three with Cody and Enzo called the Wise Guys. He also made a final three with Christmas and Enzo called the Wise Guys, to which Christmas was like, but I'm not a guy. And they're like, doesn't matter. And then in addition to that, Memphis made a final two with Enzo called the Wise Guys. So this is his little, little onion alliance, essentially. His Operation Double Date. It's just called the Wise Guys, and he set it all up within about 15 minutes.
You know what? Part of me is like, because I know he apparently was watching Big Brother 21 so hard, that's why he has this huge like hate boner for Mickey, which fully support, but maybe he saw when I forget who it was slipped up and said grateful instead of nine of them or whatever, and like that's why he's naming everything the same thing. Like maybe that's why he's not trying to get creative. I will say though, I like the name Wise Guys. Like I like when the name doesn't have like a number in it, and I like when it's like something like with a little bit of thought behind it. So
I will say this, Priya, the name Wise Guys, it, when I see it written out, it doesn't feel right.
Okay.
Are you with me? Do you immediately connect to this, or are you not with me?
Well, the thing is, I'm trying to see, like, what is it supposed to mean? Is it supposed to like, oh, stop, you're being a wise guy, like you're being a smart mouth? Is that kind of the...
No, it's like the mobster, like the Wise Guys.
Are the W and the G capitalized in your mind when you're writing it down?
Yeah.
I can see your problem. I think that's what it is. I think that's if it's lowercase G on the guys, it ends up looking more regular. But I'm with Kemi. I like that it's not some numerical nonsense, and it's at least something a little different. That's good. You know,
hold on, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Puya. Chris Walker in the chat just wrote Wise Guys, no space. Why just Wise Guys? That looks better to me.
Huh.
I don't know why.
I don't like it without the space. I feel like it's like someone's trying to get away with a word on Scrabble, and I'm like, hey, there's a space in there. Like, no. I don't know.
It just feels like it shouldn't. Because I don't know. I don't know. It feels more right to me without a space. Well, one word, Wise Guys. Okay. It just feels like one word, Wise Guys.
Did he have these alliance names pre-planned before he came on the season?
I think he did. No, so the committee was not pre-planned. The committee was supposed to be the Unusual Suspects, but that one got declined by production. This one, The Wise Guys, I feel like probably was a pre-planned one that did get approved by production.
Ew. Ew, like, be creative.
And like, it's a move. There's a movie with Danny DeVito in it called Wise Guys. So I'm surprised that didn't put a halt in it, but Unusual Suspects was halted. So I don't know if that's a word that can't be copyrighted. It's a phrase that can be copyrighted and isn't copyrighted for something. I don't know. But I mean, he picked it, so I guess it's a thing. I keep going back and forth on the strategy to name multiple alliances the same name, just so you don't slip up. I'm trying to decide if I think Memphis is the type of dude to slip it up. I feel like maybe, but also if someone like, so it all hinges on, are the people in these multiple alliances going to end up comparing notes? Because this is one of those things where, to me personally, if I was told, hey, Cammy comes up to me and says, hey, so I'm in a final two with Taryn called the Updaters. And I'm like, wait, I'm in a final two called the Updaters. I'm like, oh, he's been clowning us. I look like a whole fool. I'm in an alliance that everyone else is in the same alliance. That's insulting to me. I don't like that. It's a little off to me. But what do you do? Are you of the same page, or do you think that's like, you know, you wouldn't feel any type of way about that?
I don't know. I feel like, I guess it comes down to the person. Like, would they be the type of person to say the name? Like, if you're like, oh, I'm in a final two with, you know, so-and-so, like, how many times has someone said, like, I'm in a final two named this?
Mm.
But then again, like, even just saying that you're in a final two with someone else would raise my, like, little Kemi antennas, and I'd be like, oh, okay, so you're playing me. Like, you're lying to me, you're in a final two with me and a final two with them. Like, I don't like that. But again, I am a cynic, so I need, like, I need to be your only one. So,
well, is it kind of like if you have a two friends, and you usually do, like, you usually go bowling with this one friend, but then they ask you to go bowling one night and you're like, I don't want to go bowling with them, but then another, your other friend asks you to hang out and you're like, I could go bowling actually, and so you go bowling with your other friend, and then the friend you usually go bowling with shows up. And it's like, is it worse that you're bowling?
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's kind of our thing. You can't just be going bowling with anybody. That's our shared interest. That's our Friday nights. Like, I could see that being the case with certain activities for me.
And why do you like that person so much better than me that you were just so willing to go bowling with them? But like, what about me? Am I chopped liver?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
So I've heard, like, I think the, like, accidentally saying the alliance name, I've heard that a lot. I also, you know, I talked about how I do feel like it kind of makes Enzo feel more like he's in the in crowd, right? Because he's in with Memphis knowing that they're clowning both Cody and Christmas. I do like that aspect of it as well. However, if I know Dan Gheesling, I don't think Dan Gheesling was, like, helping Memphis the way that Ovi was helping David. Like, here's what you need to study up on. If I know Dan Gheesling, he didn't give Memphis much advice, but he definitely said, remember, it's a TV show. Make good TV. Do some fun things. And I do feel like naming a bunch of alliances the same thing is good TV.
Is that why he's been popping out of doors like the Kool-Aid Man? Do you think that he's like, that's part of his gimmick? He's like, I'm going to be like high animated and I'll have a morning show. But you know what? I could see that being the case. I feel like, again, this is one of those things where if it was someone that I would be personally rooting for, I would definitely see the comedy in this of like, oh, do it, clown him. But it's Memphis. I'm like, are you just, you know, you can't remember the names and you're going. So I totally could see it being that way of too. Like the more just like extra for the TV kind of business.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good segment on the episode. I think it's going to be fun. All right. Anything else? Anything else from the week that we have to talk about here?
Last time you asked this, I gave an answer I didn't want to give, so I'm good.
You regretted it.
I have to say this. Kevin is getting so much screen time for someone who's like virtually like invisible on the feeds. Like, I don't understand it, especially when Davon is their like DR queen. Like, I don't understand why Kevin is getting so much screen time. Like, there's so much Kevin content. I don't know why.
I have an answer for you. He's been on the block like every week. They really fall back on like the crutches of HOH nominees, veto winners. Like they tend to get the majority of the screen time. So that would definitely be my guess. And you know, in addition to that, like, you know, being on the block, he also like he like talks a lot. Like he's somebody that you can probably reach to give like exactly the soundbite they want. So
yeah, well. And he, you know, he was the week one block survivor. Statistically, he's going to end up on more vetoes because he's on the block as often as he is. So it's like, yeah, if we need someone to just give us the explain the veto comp, we'll just throw it to Kevin because he's done it already. This audience will be like, well, back at it again. So, yeah, but I'm with you. I often find myself being like, why am I getting Kevin's insight? The DR to me is the precious time where I get the unfiltered stuff or the stuff that I will not find on the feeds or on clips anywhere. This is what I want. This is the people I want to see it from, but I'll get it from Kevin and I'm like, I'm good, but it is what it is. We get it.
Yeah. I just like, I feel like I've been seeing a lot of Kevin and like, but only when I decide to tune in, but never like actually on Twitter or anything. So it's random.
Yeah. We are expecting, Davon is at least expecting a segment on Asmer, because, she talked about it in her diary room session. So, I think, we can look forward to more, Kevin segments. Cammy, are you a big Asmer fan?
I am a big Davon fan, so I will take whatever they give me.
Even if it means listening to Kevin crunch on some chips.
You know, if this is the last week of Davon that we get, then, you know, I will take whatever she can give. Even if it's just a compilation of her saying like win, 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 like that's it.
All right. I can say that right before we went live, Cody did talk to Nicole and he told her about the Wise Guys, not the name. But he did tell her about the fact that he made a three thing with Memphis and Enzo, which is interesting to me because, to my knowledge, he has not told her he's made a three thing with Tyler and Enzo, the triple threat alliance. Mm-hmm. So interesting that he decided to reveal that. He has also not told her any, you know, truth about, you know, Tyler talking about Nicole at all, or Enzo and where he really stands. He also lied about the fact that he said Enzo does not know about the committee, but he did feel comfortable talking about the Memphis alliance. That to me indicates that Cody is not particularly loyal to the Wise Guys. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that Memphis is hard to deal with. Cody is somebody who has, as we've talked about, controlled the outcome pretty much every week so far this season. And the one, you know, the one week where he didn't really get what he wanted was the Memphis HOH, where he had to choose between like Nicole and David. And when he chose Nicole, but like, he would have preferred it to be Janelle or Kacer. And yet, and once again, Memphis has not told him the plan. And now he found out that, you know, Memphis wanted David out, which is not what he wants. Now he's got to deal with this. And so I do feel like this was, Memphis did not handle this the right way. I don't think it's a coincidence that Cody told Nicole about the alliance after he found out that Memphis's secret plan was something that Cody didn't want to do. And I really do feel like that was potentially the error here that is making Cody lean more toward triple threat than the wise guys. If he wasn't leaning that way already, he also told Nicole that, that Danny told him that Memphis wants to target Tyler and Nicole first of the committee members. And he said that Danny told him that a little while ago, and interesting that she hasn't told you yet, Nicole. Nicole's not pleased.
Naturally not.
Yeah. So some interesting stuff here. I think that so far Memphis has not done a great job. It's looking like he's not going to get his way this week. And even though he did make these wise guys alliances, that at least one of them has fallen flat. We'll see if Christmas ends up telling Tyler about the other end of the wise guys, because that might really start to blow things up if it happens. So, okay. All right. What's that?
I forgot all about Christmas for a second. She hasn't been mentioned all night.
Well, we're going to go through all of them here. If you guys are ready for the Legacy Watch.
Always.
Okay, let's bring it up here. Here is where we were, where we left off last week, when we were talking about these players and their legacies. We have here Janelle in the Pantheon at the top, followed by Kacer in the top tier, the only one in the top tier. Then in the upper tier, Enzo, Tyler, Ian, Nicole, Cody, Davon, and Danny. In the middle tier, we've got Keisha, Bailey, and Memphis. In the low tier, Kevin, Nicole, Anthony, and Christmas. And then down at the bottom tier, David. All the way down. All right. Let's run through what we have this week. Starting at the bottom, once again, we once again have David in the bottom tier, continuing to rise, but still pretty firmly in the bottom tier. Kemi, do you think this is right?
Yes. How is he rising?
So, there's a point value for each player, and then there's a range of scores that you can get that place you in each tier. So there's
who's giving him higher.
So we polled the audience. she's like, hold, why is he even moving upward right now? Why is he not dead last? who is voting in this poll?
I'm just joking. Not really, though.
So I did forget to set this up, though. The audience does vote for these rankings. They place them into these various tiers based on their legacy, which can mean really anything you want it to mean. A lot of people focus a lot on gameplay, but you know, reputation and just like history and importance to the franchise, all those things really do matter. If you are somebody that placed David in any tier above bottom tier, you will have to answer to Kemi.
Well, I'm really excited for one of these players, so I'm like giddy for to move someone. So
here we go. All right, so I do think that David being on the rise, I feel like, especially since he'll probably be staying this week, I think he's going to continue to move into this underdog role, and I think people are going to continue to want to root for him, and I think that's going to be good for his overall legacy, Puya.
I do, too. So, because here's the thing. When you start at the bottom, not everyone's going to Drake and say, now we're here at the top. start at the bottom, you're probably going to stay in the bottom, especially when you're someone who's had zero to contribute to the resume from your prior appearance on the show. Here, there's been a lot of blunders, a lot of missteps. You know, we think back to the Tyler kerfuffle where he brings Tyler stuff up to other people. Now, all of this stuff, the fact that he speaks in riddles and no one knows what he really wants, the whole Memphis thing. However, if he was to win an HOH competition and be the cause of a divide in the house, be a cause of everything coming to, you know, coming up to the top and causing the big problems, and then his nominations cause the thing, and he's the first person to take someone out of the big alliance and maybe change the course of the game, I could see him bumping up a tier, certainly, because that's all it'll take is one big comp for him to have a legacy. But for now, the legacy of David still is kind of the same as it was. Is a lot of people are looking at it as, hey, someone who didn't play the game was brought in for an all-star season and then kind of didn't do a lot there. But given that he also had the secret power and he did kind of cause a problem in the scheme of the house, because he didn't go as a result of him pulling himself down. We had the situation where Davon was safe and Kevin was safe. So that kind of brings him up a little bit. But I think that if I had to look at it, Taryn, he's either going to top out in the low tier. If he somehow wins, he ends up in the middle. But again, that's who knows. We'll see.
Here's what tells me that the audience is just waiting to give him something, that they're just antsy to move David up this list, is that we talked about it this morning. I talked about it with Liana that people they really want to latch on to, like, they really want to give David credit for something. That David knows that Nicole is the one that flipped her vote and not him, not himself. He knows that he didn't do it, which means it must be Nicole, which is like, whoo, he knows something that other people don't. Look at him. He's got great reads again. Like, people are that desperate to give him some credit for something that.
I don't mean to interrupt, but Huya, do you know who started this live stream tonight?
Who?
Did you start this live stream tonight?
I did not.
I didn't either. So by process of elimination, I do wonder who it could have been.
It definitely wasn't me.
Maybe it was Taryn.
Oh my God. How'd you guys know?
Shaking the table.
Yeah, the reads are so good.
King.
it's like getting a full a really good grade on an open book exam. It's like like, what did you expect? They let you open the book. You were allowed to do whatever you wanted. You didn't have to study. Like, of course he's gonna know. So where Jones in? Everyone's just ready to put something on this kid's resume, because the wait has been long.
But you know what? I don't hate it, because, you know, whatever. You know, what else do we expect in 2020? What else do we expect from this, you know, legendary, you know, long-awaited all-star season that's been delivering and feeding us well? You know, it is what it is at this point. I will just take whatever is going to be given to me, so...
All right. Well, here we go. Above David, we have Nicole Anthony, who has fallen below Christmas at the bottom of the low tier. And let me tell you, she's hanging on by a thread at this point. She's actually fallen since the last time we checked in, which is surprising. Like, Puya, have you been following Nicole Anthony on social media? Has she done anything lately? I don't know why she fell all of a sudden.
I can't say that I've seen or thought about Nicole since the third week. And that's not me being shady. That's just like, you are off my screen, so you're off my mind a little bit. So when I heard you say that, I was like, or am I about to get information on some social media stuff that happened? I think it's just the case of it's been longer and longer. She's forgotten. She was also last season. So naturally, the legacy of a more recent player is not seen as highly as the legacy of someone who's played way back when. an older player, because the term legacy kind of does imply, like, you know, they've withstood the test of time. So potentially that's what it is. I just think it's a simple case of just, we kind of forgot that week two was, Nicole was still in that house. So
I wonder if people were reminded of Nicole's time in the house, seeing the situation with Day and David, where like Day is not trusting David when he was, you know, when he did vote that way, and they remember, oh, this is what happened when Nicole didn't trust Janelle and Kacer, and they were remembering that, and they're like, oh yeah, Nicole's the worst.
I don't know.
Yeah. Cammy, how do you feel about this placement?
I don't have anything.
There you go. all right. So above Nicole Anthony is Christmas. There she is. She did get a bit of a bump here. She was hanging on by a thread in the low tier, at the bottom of the low tier, and she has moved up since then. Not too much, but like half a tier, basically. She's moved up since last week. Obviously, she had a very bad week last week. No, I guess it wasn't that bad of a week. It was the week before that was really bad. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I was going to ask, is it just that Nicole got worse grades and Christmas stayed the same, that she went up one?
Nicole moved down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Christmas moved up a bit.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, bottom three to me is the perfect placement of Christmas, because really, outside of getting me big mad that 1 week that she was HOH, I can't think of what she's contributed to the BB future, because I'm not even willing to give her untouchable. I don't think she's the one who came up with that term, so she doesn't bring us legacy.
It was Bailey, right? Bailey was the first. I think Bailey was the first.
I believe so.
Which is not really a credit you want to have, though.
No, given fair. That everyone's like doesn't want to hear the word anymore. But what I'm saying, she's contributed nothing. So outside of just pure anger for a week for me. So yeah, I think this is an appropriate spot for her.
Okay, Cammy. So we hadn't talked about her on the podcast until now. What are your thoughts on Christmas?
You know what? At the beginning of the season, I feel like Christmas was playing a really good game. Like, she, you know, she was in everyone's good graces. She probably wouldn't have been put up if anyone had won HOH. And then after the blow up with Bailey and Davon, she just kind of shot herself in the foot. Like, I feel like when you're HOH,
she shot herself in the foot.
Figuratively speaking.
I love that.
Another foot was lost. But, you know, I feel like when you're HOH is probably when you have to tread the lightest, because, you know, you really don't want to get put up the next week, or, you know, you just don't want to do anything to have people like sour their opinions of you. And she like effortlessly did that. Like, everyone was kind of looking at her side eyes like, what's going on right here? And everyone was just kind of talking trash like at the tail end of her HOH. But I don't know if that's been forgotten. I feel like she's an easy person to throw up if anyone in the committee or whatever wins HOH next week. And yeah, because I feel like whoever stays between Davon, Kevin, and David, you know, the remaining two probably won't be targeted next week. It's going to be someone in the big alliance. And I feel like Christmas is an easy person to toss up. So as far as her overall legacy, I think this is a good placement. I mean, she was kind of handed final three in her last season. So
carried, you might say.
She might say she was carried
to the final three.
She was carried to the final three. Yes.
Yeah.
If I may, Taryn, I think that look no further. The bottom three, the worst three, if you think about their legacy, you can jot it down to a meme that they became. So David's got the Reeds meme and the, you know, wasn't here before meme, 187 IQ meme. Nicole A, my parents are in my basement meme. I'm afraid of birds meme. And then Christmas is, I won an HOH because people let me. It was a sprint one and I didn't have a leg on me. And then I fell. I was on top of a rodeo clown and I broke my foot. And then Zingbot zinged me to smithereens. Those are her three memes. So everyone else, you can look at something they've done in the past game or something that you can look at and be like, that's an actual thing. But for the most part, these three can, you know, be kind of boiled down into like memes. So,
I mean, to be fair though, Puya, she very rightfully won her last HOH. I mean, sometimes you just have to beast mode it. And, you know, you just go on autopilot and you just kind of do what needs to be done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
Camry, I feel like earlier you had one of those moments that I often have, especially at the beginning of a season, when you said, you know, if anyone in the committee, and you're just like, did I really just say the committee? Or whatever. I go through that every season. Like, well, if someone from the Pretty Boys, or whatever, when...
Wait, didn't... I could have sworn I saw you quote someone's OnlyFans content. Could you just...
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you did. I watched it live. Oh, that was phenomenal.
We want to hear it again.
Oh, never again. Never again in my life.
The clip will remain in infamy, though. We'll always have the clip.
This is exclusive twitch.tv/Darren Armstrong content.
Great plug.
Thought about going there, decided not to. Moving on, above Christmas, is Kevin still here at the low tier? He has moved up a smidge since last week, but he is going to remain here in the bottom tier. I also feel like Kevin is another person who I think is primed to move up on this list, so long as he survives and is able to do something. In that, he's one veto win or HOH win away from from popping up on this list. Kemi, how have you, other than being confused about seeing him on your screen, how do you feel about Kevin?
You know, I respect the perpetual pun, and here's why. Because they are resilient. They are, you know, they don't self-evict. And, you know, DR sessions, I guess, like you guys said earlier. I mean, we will see a lot of Kevin in the future, probably. But it sucks because I feel like when you're put on the block one or two times early on, it's easy to keep throwing you up and it's hard to take you seriously. So let's say he made it to the final two. It would be really hard for people to vote for him. And that really sucks. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel a little bit sad about Kevin. Kevin is somebody that like he talks to the cameras in the morning often. And like a few weeks ago, he was like, this has sucked so much. But like, I'm here at Big Brother. I'm trying to enjoy it. I know I'm going to look back at this and I'm going to laugh. And it's like, but I want to enjoy this experience. And then the weeks have gone on and he has just been beaten down. He's just like this. This has just been miserable. Like, this is just, I've just gotten nowhere this whole game. This has been such a drag. And just like seeing that like spirit just like, just be beaten down has been brutal to watch. But yeah.
Very much so. I think that Kevin's the one person in these bottom two tiers that I think, you know, we think back to his first season. There was a lot, there was so much there that I enjoyed. You know, he's the big Jeff Slayer, one of the big Jeff Slayers. That's not an easy thing to do, especially when Big Jeff gets gifted coup d'etats and like can do whatever he wants, you know. So I he has that. He's had a lot of entertaining moments. I'm talking back to the awful people in the house is how I'm going to name them. So he's had good moments. And then in this season, I agree. I think we were very excited to see him. And he's been very excited to, you know, sink his teeth back into Big Brother. The problem is it's been adversity plus from the get-go. He sits on the block week one and he's just not been able to find his footing since. His reads have been all over the place, awful. And he just came to a position where now he is the pawn king this season, right? And I love that he is not someone who has given up backed off, who has said, you know, if anything happens, I'm just going to pick my ball up and go home. I don't think Kevin thought he was ever going to get the chance to play. And he's rated it, what, a 4.5 out of 10, his experience. I don't think that's going to stop him from continuing to be here. Even if it's a 3, he's going to stay here. And I commend him for that. I love that. I do think he's primed for a little upgrade should he win a thing. If he wins a thing, has some kind of agency, even for 1 week, that should push him up a little bit. But as much as I've not really, you know, Kevin's not really given me much to enjoy this season as much as I expected in the preseason, I can still recognize how excited he is as a player, as a human, to be playing this game. And I love that from him. Also, he gets the doesn't matter whether he's on our screens or not, every episode, he's guaranteed to be the guys to say, you know, you want to watch. So, I mean, he's got that going for him as well. He's the, you know, you want
to
watch.
That's the worst spot to be in, Puya. Nobody wants to be that person.
I remember Steve was that person. Steve Moses. I don't remember anyone else really that like I can pinpoint. If we look at them, am I going to be upset? Be like, oh, I don't
Who
like
Who was
them.
It last season? Kemi, do you remember?
I have no, I don't even, I just know I was, I came to win. So I have no idea. It was probably Nicole Anthony.
Yeah, I feel like they try. They usually, I feel like they usually go for the nerdy archetype.
Could it have been Cliff then?
I'm seeing some Cliff in the chat. Yeah.
Okay.
You know you want to watch. I'm just
Before the wife, you knew you wanted to watch.
Oh man, some memes stay forever.
You know, you know what? Speaking of Kevin from Big Brother 11, I really feel like we're due for a last minute lie, don't you, Puya? I feel like we really need some last minute lies in our life. I need Kevin going to Memphis to say, "Hey, I just heard Cody talking about his final three with Tyler and Enzo." Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I need something from Kevin that reminds me of how he screwed over Jeff in season 11.
I would love that, something little big brain like that that you just throw in there, and then you know you watch it explode in front of you. I would love that. Give me more of that and none of the, oh, and I'm Dan Giesling's cousin's nephew, and then walk out of the door. Don't give me that. Give me more of that. I think Kevin's someone who can make that happen. Again, he needs just a little bit of agency so that they take his words more seriously, because I think that's getting lost in the adversity, in the pondum, that I don't think his words carry as much weight right now for in-game currency.
Thinking about it now, though, since Tyler holds the veto, Memphis can't do anything about it anyway. So instead, I want him to last minute lie. Sorry, you know, sorry to Davon. She's out at this point. If Kevin's staying next week, he survives. Last minute lie is going to be Memphis is the Russell, which, right? Kind of works.
Good comparison. Like it.
Big Jeff is, I don't know, the Tyler or something. Tyler, Cody, maybe.
Cody, probably Cody.
Cody wins HOH next week. Kevin goes to Cody. I overheard Memphis, a.k.a. Russell, and he was talking about how he wants to take a shot at you next week. And then, boom, Memphis backdoor next week.
And the fans rejoice, and we have celebrations. We get a Memphis eviction party going on Twitter. Hey, this is a win-win for everyone. I think we're just like David is due for a comp win. We are due for a good week, man. And this is it. Karen, you did to me what I did to you with the Kaser pressure cooker prediction we did a couple weeks back. Now I need this. If next week doesn't have some of this, I'm going to be upset.
It's going to be Kevin's fault if it doesn't happen, because he's the one okay. that set the expectations.
Blame it on Kevin.
All right. Above Kevin on the Legacy Watch is Bailey, who has fallen below Memphis this week in the middle tier. She is down at the bottom of the middle tier. Now, this is not a fall for Bailey. She's just staying the same. It's just that Memphis has gone up this week in the Legacy Watch. Kemi, what are your thoughts on Bailey this season?
I think it was good. I was wishing. I was hoping that we got to see another Bailey HOH. just to kind of see how, because like I feel like Bailey's someone who learned from her past HOH to be a little less trusting. So I was hoping to see another Bailey HOH this season, but we didn't get it. But yeah, I mean, I feel like, well, I guess she was, again, a little bit more trusting than she should have been when it comes to Christmas. But yeah, I think it's a good spot for her.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I do think that Bailey is someone who, coming into this season, I think there was quite a few of us that were like, you know what? Like, we just watched Bailey come through on the challenge. I'm excited. I'm here. Let's see what's going to happen. It was a horrible draw in the house for Bailey, unfortunately, to the point where, you know, she was the last person to leave before the jury. I think ultimately, looking at it now, given the support system she has around her, the fact that Swaggy was there for her, it's a good wipe the bad experience here away. Tesla, they ride into the what?
Tesla in hand.
Tesla, nice Tesla in hand. Ride that baby right into the sunset. Everything's good. We still, you know, the fans are still there. The fans she had are still there. So everything's looking good for Bailey. I think middle tier is not a horrible place to be. Ultimately, nothing to you. No one can take that away from you. If anything, you were robbed of potentially climbing that a little more had you had a little bit more time in the house. Because I do think, for me, Bailey was someone in that group which I thought, had she gotten a bit of power, she would have definitely done a thing to that house. So.
Yeah. I also feel like she did, I think, prove herself in the game a bit, at least. There was an early exit here for Bailey, but I do think when she was in the game, playing the game, she was doing pretty well for a little while. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this at the time, that it was more Devon's fault than Bailey's fault that things went raw, that things went a little awry. And she ended up taking the hit for it. But I do think we saw Bailey playing in a power position briefly, and we saw that she was doing well. So I think that she did manage to prove herself there to a degree. Above Bailey, we have Keisha, who has also fallen below Memphis this week. Keisha did drop just a small amount this week. She's been pretty steady for a while, but she's been small drops week after week here for Keisha, actually. So not being in the house, not being on people's minds, seems to have lowered people's estimations of Keisha week after week. If this happens for another like 3 or 4 weeks, then she'll fall into the bottom tier, which is pretty nuts. Kemi, what were your thoughts on Keisha?
I love Keisha. I was really hoping we got another laughing segment from Keisha, because I feel like she's just one of those people that, whether she's angry or happy or sad, like, I just love watching Keisha content. So, I mean, as far as gameplay goes, we didn't really see any of that this season, but I would have loved to see more Keisha segments. So, oh well.
Yeah. I feel like I keep waiting for Keisha to go back up. Like she's not associated with this season anymore. Isn't that a good thing for Keisha? Like, Keisha started in the preseason. Keisha was upper tier. She was like a full 10 points higher in the rankings. She took an early bullet. And she hasn't been able to, I really thought that Keisha might bounce back. But it just hasn't happened, Puya.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, Keisha, you know, comes to us onto this chart from season 10, one of the more iconic seasons. You tell anyone asks, which season should I show my friend first? 10 is always in the conversation, if not the go-to choice, for many reasons. She was a big part of that. So coming into the season, that legacy sitting real nice, sitting real high. Then the first week of gameplay, she is one of the early bullet takers, but also she didn't really do much to try and dig herself out of that situation. She kind of like laid down, took it. But I mean, she got a lovely check, took that right to the bank, went home with it, and now has the Wendy's Twitter account equivalent of Big Brother with the savage tweets coming out of that account. Still don't know who's running that account, by the way, but definitely by far has the most roasting Twitter account in all of BB alumni land. So that's some what of a legacy for me, but I do think, again, it's the out of sight, out of mind that's going to keep bringing you down on this list.
Here's another theory. I think that in the preseason, only the people that knew about Keisha voted in the poll, right? This season, now that they've seen Keisha, they like everybody feels like, I know Keisha. But right. Maybe now all the people who only know Keisha from this season are voting, and that's skewing her lower than where she was prior to the season. So we'll see what kind of impact that has long term, I guess, as we continue doing this. Above Keisha, we have Memphis in the middle tier. He has gone up this week. He went up a good amount, actually, this week. I have to imagine that a lot of this comes from the Wise Guys business, which, as I said, I think is probably going to make for some good TV. Cammy, I already asked you how you felt about Memphis. Do you think this is the right placement for him legacy wise?
OK, so I was a casual my first season of watching Big Brother, which was season 20. And I've obviously been a casual ever since, aside from this season. So I didn't really see what he did on his season. I did watch season 10, but, you know, I only watched the episodes, so I don't really know that much aside from the episodes. This season, though, I feel like, you know, he's the first person to win a second HOH, so that works for him. And he's kind of not really, I don't want to say he's not really on anyone's radar, but I don't see anyone putting him up until this week. Like I couldn't imagine like in the past weeks, anyone putting him up. And even next week, I don't really see it. I feel like he's kind of like untouchable, not to use that word, but like, he's like kind of like the godfather of this season. And I can't picture someone like turning his key. So I feel like, you know, he's in a good place, especially considering who's higher than him. I think he's in a good place, but I hate that he's above Keisha. I hate it. So yeah.
Yeah. I think that, that like over the last week, the committee has really come into focus even more. And I think as the creator of the committee, that's probably putting some more attention on Memphis. The fact that, that like the committee basically stopped Danny from getting Tyler out and instead got Ian out. It's really solidified the fact that like, okay, the committee is in control of this game. And as Julie keeps telling us, Memphis is the mastermind behind the committee. So.
Like, I know she's not watching, so I don't know what cue cards, like, I don't know who's writing these, but like, I don't know who's pushing this Memphis narrative, but the edit is kind of, well, the game is like kind of pushing Cody. I don't know why this is like pushing Memphis so hard. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah. No, they're really doing the whole Memphis on Memphis. It's a little bit much, but I will say for me, you know, it's he's kind of getting, because none of the older school players are there anymore, he's getting all of the, hey, old school still got it push, I think. Like he is, who would have thought Memphis is the one with the most HOH wins so far? He also has a veto to his name. So he's got a little bit going on there, which puts him in a better standing. And then I do think that, you know, yes, some of his ways are flawed. I think he is probably the worst person to utilize HOHs, in my opinion. I think that he doesn't really understand that by winning safety, you are given an opportunity to, you know, kind of use that to your advantage, build some social bonds. But then he goes ahead and he does a, you know, a double final three. That's not a bad position to put yourself in. I think it's a very good, you know, little double triangle. What's a double triangle? Like a diamond that he's put himself in. So that's nice. That's good. Right. So he does have something to him. I think other parts of him, I personally don't really like, but I mean, look at him go. Look at Gramps doing his thing. Okay. And I think that's the biggest thing he's getting, is that he's the old guy who's still got like something in the tank at this point.
All right. There you go. All right. Above Memphis. And I'll tell you, it's close. Above Memphis, Danny, who has fallen down into the middle tier. Danny, top of the middle tier here, that very far fall from grace here for Danny, who started in the top tier, now all the way down to the middle tier. It's been a rough week for Danny, and it's been a slow fall over the course of 7 weeks here, but every single week she has been dropping bit by bit until now she's here in the middle tier after a disastrous HOH reign, Kemi.
You know what's sad? I was really, really rooting for Danny preseason because she has a Dalmatian, and Billion, my Dalmatian, was following her Dalmatian before I even knew it was her Dalmatian. So I was just, when I found that out, I was just rooting for her. And I just don't, you know, I feel like, you know, when you kind of like look up to a celebrity, not to say that anyone's celebrities on Big Brother, but like you look up to a celebrity and then you start to find out more about them and it's like, oh, like it just normalizes them a little bit. And it's like, oh, you're not as shiny. I feel like that's what's been going on a lot with me this season. It's like, oh, I've been looking up to these people for the past 2 years because that's how long I've been watching. But you know, now it's kind of like, oh, okay, cool. That's how I feel about like Danny a lot. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, you were a Dalmatian owner. I'm obsessed with you. And then just watching feeds, it's like, okay, I'll root for someone else. So,
yeah. What happens when you know, you watch somebody on the show and then you start talking to them and they're even shinier and more awesome as you start talking to them, like when I met you, Kemi?
Wait, me?
Yeah.
Am I shinier?
Shinier.
I'm on the spot.
Pooja, do we have a name for that one? Who's that? Who's gone up in the Legacy Watch? I think it's Kacer this season.
I would think so.
Yeah,
I would think so. I think that it just got shinier and shinier with the with our boy Kacer there. So yeah, so here's the thing on the on Danny, right? Danny comes through. Oh my god, it's been ages since we've seen Danny. 13, we remember her from 13. She went after Brendan and she went after the big dogs that season. She you know, went away and went against the grain to get something done because Danny wanted to kind of be like the Daenerys Targaryen there and like break all the chains and like bring all the newbies that to the end. Didn't really pan out for her, right? So then she comes through here and everyone, I was excited. You know, Danny's one of my faves, one of the ones I was most excited to see back. And it's been shaky at best. We've talked multiple times about the fact that she is not subtle at all. She does things that are smart, but when everyone knows it, it's no longer impressive. It's no longer, you know, cool. It's no longer gonna work for you. So it's a problem. There's been some moments that I've not liked that she's been a part of, also problem. Then there's her HOH last week, which, you know, a little bit not her fault because, you know, it took twists to get there, but also you put up Tyler, who probably you should have been looking at getting rid of and you didn't. And all of that just for Ian to end up leaving anyway. So I do think that the fact that this is on the heels of her just having finished her HOH reign, not shocking. And I personally think that the fact that she didn't use her power this week should kind of validates a bump down for me for now, because I think that was just a very elementary mistake of, you literally, your power was very garbage. The one out you had to use it for yourself, you just said no to because you were worried that you were going to be put on radars when, because you're not subtle, you've already been on many radars many weeks now. So,
yeah, this Danny really feels to me like the epitome of like, I should have gone out on that high note. That was, I don't know how this is going to turn around for you here. All right. Above Danny, we have Devon in the upper tier, holding on. She did drop from last week, That she made it to the upper tier last week, but she did take a bit of a hit this week, holding on there in the upper tier, I don't know if it's gonna last, especially if this is her last week in the house. I'm not sure where this goes from here. Cammy, how do you feel about this?
I hate this. I'm somehow hoping that Tyler ends up using the veto and she can stay, but I don't know. I like this placement for her. At least she's in the upper tier. You know, it's what she deserves. Like, I feel like Davon is she's such a present. She's such an iconic, like, house guest. Maybe not so much player, but like, she's a very iconic house guest. I mean, where else are we going to get the memes? So, you know, I like her being in an upper tier, but I'm really hoping she survives the week.
Yes, Puya.
She's not a meme. She's a meme generator, which is different than the ones we kind of roasted earlier. No, she's you know, and she's given us so many things in so many different ways that just not everyone's capable of. She gives us entertaining diary room sessions. She gives us entertaining moments on the show. She gives us entertaining moments on feeds. She's always a delight to hear talk. There are moments where she has a wrong read and it's hard to watch, especially if you're a big Davon fan. You can't, like, you're like, oh, I love you, but like, why can't you see it? You're wrong on this one. However, she has a lot to offer. You know, it's not every time where someone who goes out early their first season is given the redemption shot and proves, hey, you were wrong. You were right. You were right in bringing me back. You know, I think we look at someone who's on this season, some people will be like, oh, you were wrong. But Davon's been right, and she's been nothing but collecting accolades for me. First comp ever in Big Brother history won this past week.
But how disrespectful that they gave her that tiny little veto. Like,
I know, it was the worst week to have the mini veto gimmick thing happen. If anything, it should have been over. Like, once they got unshrunk, it should have been like a massive veto. Yes. Like the biggest veto. It's kind of like a championship belt at that point. But I think, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, she has now improved on her placement from the last game, right?
Yeah.
So those are both improvements in my books. Those are both upgrades. So I think that she's, to me, has gotten a little bit better on the legacy. I think what keeps her lower is probably some of the mystery she's had along the way here.
Yeah, I think heading into this week, she was probably like, probably still improving.
Yes.
But then not believing David probably took her back down. I tweeted this. I feel like she should be able to keep the tiny veto as like a bracelet or something.
They don't need it. They're not going to use it again. It should be hers. I think 100% they should give it to her.
Matt Hoffman still has his diamond veto.
Hey. And that fell apart in the middle of that ceremony. So,
all right. Above Davon, we have
so good at the challenge. Like,
yes.
Not forget.
Yeah. Above Davon, we have Nicole Franzel.
Ooh.
Who has fallen below Cody. Nicole did take a decent sized hit this week. I imagine that losing Ian and the way that she went about losing Ian was not great for the audience. The audience really does not like it when you try to play them. They want you to fool other people. No, that's not true. They want you to fool people that they don't like. They don't want you to fool people that they do like. And that includes themselves. They do like themselves typically, and they don't want you to fool them. And what Nicole did is that she fooled Davon, who people do like, and she tried to fool the audience, which the audience also tends to like themselves. So this was not a good week for her here, Kemi.
Yeah, I mean, is this considered breaking, like, the fourth wall of this podcast if I bring up like some Twitter stuff?
No, go please.
Did you guys see that compilation on Twitter of like her acting, and it was like,
yes,
on the set? Oh my god, I had no idea. Like, I wasn't watching too closely, so I was like, yeah, she's really sad that, like, she's playing it up a little bit, but she's really sad that her friend's going home. But when you clip it together like that, I was like, sociopath. Like, I was like, what the hell is going on right now? I'm like, and it's so quiet on the set. And then she's like, fixing her makeup. Oh my God, I cannot. I mean, I do understand trying to control the narrative of, like, your edit, but I have never seen anything like that. So I don't even know what to think. I don't know what to say.
I saw that video that you're mentioning and like, it was good, but I felt like it missed the best part, the best line that Nicole had, which was, I'm going to have to cry. I'm not going to be able to cry. Like, I wish they had clipped that, like, right with the, like, this is the hardest thing, with, like, no tears. Yeah. Because I felt like that. Yeah. I feel like that would have been great.
Yeah. These happen. And that's the thing. This is the biggest qualm I had coming into the season when I said, Nicole is not my cup of tea. It's this. It's the woe is me. Because here's the thing. To me, Nicole could be a top tier villain of Big Brother. She really could. If only she took the role and accepted it. But Nicole, because now she's the social media influencer, the one thing she's back for, gang, is more profits, more moolah. That's the biggest thing. That and wanting to be the two-time winner. I do think that part of her still wants to be a two-time winner. So she's obviously here for that as well. But it's all in the money for her. I think that the fact that they tipped her off, that, you know, the Ian stuff had happened, kicked her into overdrive to really go on the defense on this, come up with this whole bogus narrative. And it's just, it's nasty. It's icky. Like, Taryn, I'm one of those people. I don't like to be made a fool of. Don't try and think you're going to fool me. Hoodwink everyone in the house if you want. That is fine. That's within the game. If anything, I respect that. But do not come into the diary room of the show that you love, the show that you say you're a super fan of, and then pretend to pull one over the millions that are watching. First of all, you're not that slick. Second of all, it's insulting to our intelligence. And third of all, they're already gone. Those endorsements are gone. So you need to not do that. It's also more insulting when on your way out of the DR, you look into the mirror and you kind of like check your head. Like, come on. It's just icky. And to do all this to Ian, and like, I get it. Ian wasn't really on her side at points and was going to turn on her. But like, to do all this, you might as well have just said, hey, I'm stabbing you in the front. If you don't vote for me, you don't. Adios. Bye. Move on. This is all coming down to she wants to maintain this image of, look at me, I'm short and I'm innocent looking, I'm sweet, I got a halo over my head. But she's not been that character since BB16. She has been the devil-horned villain since then. She just doesn't want to accept it. And with that comes trying to overcorrect your image. And I'm not about that. I will not stand for that. I will not sit for that. It's all a yikes for me. And I'm going to get off the soapbox before I come off like a hater. Just like I said before, it's not my cup of tea.
I will say, and I want to be clear that, I feel like if she got away with it, I would be like more upset. But I feel like almost because she didn't get away with it, like, there is a part of me that like I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed watching this whole production, knowing that she's not getting away with it. The gall of this woman to just flat out lie to us and pretend as she's casting a vote. Like, I watch Big Brother because I like watching people lie to each other for some dumb reason. So like, there is a part of me that watches her try to lie to me, and I'm like, I don't like, I see what you're doing here. That one aspect of it, I actually like. I don't know, she provided me a lot more entertainment in that eviction episode than I think I otherwise would have gotten, because she was trying so hard. But I'm otherwise very much on board with everything else that you said, Booyah.
See, I feel like I wish I could be like that, Taryn, but I can't, because it's like, I know she's fooling the casuals. So it's like, I think about people like Angela Rummins, who probably got it so hard from the casuals at the beginning of her season. I don't know. But like, you know, that whole Ice Queen thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have people like Nicole, who production's really catering to her with this edit. And it's just so unfair. Like, you have people who just sit there and do nothing, and then they're seen as one way because whatever. And then you have people who are like going in with a game plan, and it's working out for them. Like, I cannot believe what I saw. Like I was being, I think that's what it is. You enjoy being like fooled a little bit, like, or not fooled, but like you enjoy the attempt at fooling you. And I'm just like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, I, cause again, and like I said, like I, cause I agree with you. Like, if I felt like, cause what I've seen on the internet, not only on Twitter and like the usual places, but I've also seen like articles, headlines of like Nicole being mean to Ian, Nicole lied. Like, I saw like articles about like Nicole tries to fool fan base. So like, I feel like it's out there enough that I'm not like, because otherwise I'd be like, hey, guys, she is a liar. Just, you need to know. But right. I feel like it's out there, and that makes me feel a little bit like I can kind of laugh at it a little more.
That Leo DiCaprio meme where he's like sitting in the chair and he's like pointing, and he's like, you know what I'm talking about? Where he's like pointing and it's like, hey, this is what's going on.
Yes. From Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That's how I feel like when I saw that like clip, like that little video being put together. I'm like, where are the casuals? Like, you guys need to
see. Yes.
Oh my God.
Oh boy. All right. Well, above Nicole is Ian Terry, who has fallen down below Cody. Ian Terry, who did take a bit of a hit this week. Not a big one, to be honest. Now, Ian, who he started the preseason in the top tier, he has fallen a decent amount. But given his week, where like his game has blown up, you know, his attitude was not great the whole way through. I think that this was actually a pretty decent placement for Ian this week. Again, decent fall in terms of his points, but not a huge one. And in my opinion, a lot of this comes down to the way he left in the episode. In the episode, he gave this heartfelt speech. He was dressed up nice, and he went out there and he took it like a champ. And he had a good attitude about it. And I feel like that. Like, it really did. I'm seeing Harry in the chat. Or no, it wasn't Harry. I always do this. Somebody in the chat just said, unconscious, said his exit saved him. I agree with that. I feel like the last taste we had of Ian was this good exit from on the episode that most people saw. And I really feel like that helped cement his legacy here in the upper tier and prevented it from falling any further. Here. How did you feel about Ian, Kemi?
I mean, I think especially in his exit interview but his like eviction interview with Julie, I think it just showed that he took it all like in stride, and he just was a good sport about things. Like, she revealed a lot that he wasn't aware of, and he just was just, you know, good game, like, oh, they really got over on me, and like I respect that. Like, I remember when I first came out and I hadn't had my phone yet, I was like, you know, everything just happens, you know, whatever, you know, good for them. I do wonder how he's going to feel after he gets his phone back and like he, you know, sees different things. But I do like that in the context of the information that he was provided, he was a good sport about it. I wonder how he's doing in jury. I hope he's not on the brink of leaving. I don't think so, but I hope not.
I do think the exit saved him big time. It's been it's been interesting seeing Ian on, obviously, this season. I think that I didn't expect to see him on the list. Of all the winners on the list, I would have never expected Ian would be one of them that would want to come back. I thought he was relatively fine having moved past, but it was really nice to see him back. And he did share a bit more of him. I did tweet about this the night he went out. He did share more of him that he hadn't really spoken about. I didn't know anything about. So I did appreciate that the dialogue he had with Kacer and some of the house guests about it. I definitely subscribe to what you've said, Taryn, which the worst thing about all this stuff that's been hitting the headlines is that we know Ian wouldn't have wanted it this way. I don't think the whole reason Ian hadn't said anything was he wanted to be known as Ian, the Big Brother 14 winner, the Big Brother 22 house guest, not Ian headline here, which is pretty much what has happened at this point. So when he gets that phone, I know he's going to be upset. Now, that being said, his final week in the house, I had mixed feelings about, because he definitely went the route of like, well, I'm not going to play ball. Like, screw this. I'm not about this. Yada, yada, yada. And I think part of it is, I think it's frustration because I do think Ian kind of played, you know, Ian kind of did classic Ian outside of that one moment before the pick two people comp that Christmas fought very hard to win, by the way. He was very much ready to do some stuff had he gotten his way. But then he goes out early, or maybe it was the comp before. That part doesn't matter. The point is, he had one moment where he was going to do something that he didn't. Then he kind of went back to the old school subscription of, I'm going to continue sleeping in the first half and I'm going to wake up and go to war in the second half and do some stuff there to get some damage. And he just never got to do anything. And I think he realizes he kind of comes off as a bit of a flop this season. And I don't think he was happy with that. He didn't want to take that sitting down. He did everything he could, leading to the exit. And then that was the classiest exit I could have ever imagined for Ian. I definitely did not think he was going to just, you know, not react to any of the things he saw. Doesn't seem like he's going to hold any ill will for now. But I also, having seen that part now, I'm like, I feel like Ian would have been fine if he didn't get tears in his goodbye messages or like, you know, any of that drama. So we'll just have to wait and see with him. He's the jury foreman now. So, you know, that's a new position for him to be in.
Yeah, and I am curious to see what being on the jury will do legacy-wise. I think that generally being a non-bitter juror is going to be good for your legacy. That people really respect it when you respect the game. However, if you are a bitter juror and you're very funny and witty about it, that can also help your legacy. A bitter juror that is not fun about it, that's the worst place to be, I think, in terms of legacy. So I'm very curious to see over the rest of the season when we start getting jury segments, and you know, after the season ends and we get the votes, what that may do legacy wise. I do feel ultimately that this is pretty good placement for Ian. I do think, you know, his legacy probably takes a bit of a hit here overall, but it's kind of one of those situations where it's like, hey, we'll always have 6-1 over Dan Giesling. You know, like,
right.
Like nothing can take that away from you. So, when you've beaten the, you know, pretty consensus best player of all time in a jury vote, like, your legacy at the very least is always going to be a little bit above average.
Player, are you going to let Derek hear that and just, that just sitting your, like, how dare you, Jared? who's a bitter juror who was funny about it?
I think I think Cody in season 19, people 19. Really liked him being like mad at Paul, but like he got away with, you know what I mean? Like there are bitter jurors that can like get away with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it is pretty rare, I do think. I think it's pretty rare overall.
I'll never forget. I feel like I've only seen season 21, like once, and only seen like the finale once. But I will never forget the smile that Bailey had on her face, and she's like nodding as Tyler's speaking. She's like, uh-huh. Okay. It's just so funny.
Yes, I do think. Well, I think Bailey's like a controversial one in terms of like some people loved the bitterness, some people hated the bitterness. But yeah, I think it's a tough line to walk, and I do also think you also can't be like a pander. Like, there's also the non-bitter jurors that are like panderers, like that do the half Murphy and stand up and like stump for the I just want to not ask a question. I just want to address the jury that this is the best player of all time. Like, people don't like that either. So you gotta be, there's
we don't care.
Yeah, there's certain jury etiquette, I think. All right,
I think that was Jack Matthews last season. Like, he really got up there and was like,
I just want to wish both of you guys a good game, and I'm going to be voting for the best player.
We get it. Like, we know you're voting for your bro. Like,
sit down.
Yeah, like, sit down and shut up. Like, we don't care.
Yeah.
Okay, I take it back.
All right. Well, above Ian, we do have Cody. Now, Cody, who has gone above Nicole and Ian, they did both fall, but Cody did also rise this week for the first time. He has been very consistently in the same spot since the preseason. And then the week before last, he actually fell, but he stayed in the upper tier. This week, he has for the first time breached that ceiling and has risen up near the top of the upper tier. He is knocking on the door of top tier, I think, as people see that he is running this game and is probably the front runner to win this thing. Kemi, how do you feel about Cody?
I think this is the perfect spot for Cody. I really feel like he's taking the Derek blueprint. How do you pronounce Derek's last name?
Like,
Levasseur. Levasseur. Oh my God. All this time I've been like Levasseur. Like, I had no idea what it was. But he's taking the Levasseur blueprint and just like carbon copy from season 16 to season 22. At least my casual eyes of that. So, you know, I think it's a perfect placement for him, especially with who's in front of him. I think this is as far to the bottom as he could possibly be.
Yeah. I've seen, and I'm seeing it some in the chat too, that people already trying to say like, well, he doesn't get credit for this because of pre-gaming, which I think is kind of a weird argument, because one, we still don't know what the real extent of the pre-gaming was. I don't think we will have
they were pre-gaming. Stop it.
Extent. Kemi, I'm saying extent, because I think a lot of people are still under the impression that there was a massive pregame alliance formed, which I think has been demonstrably false from what we've seen on the feeds. And so I think how much pregaming was there? In my opinion, I think he connected with Memphis, and I think he connected with Nicole prior to the season. Do you have additional information for us, Kemi?
I don't know anything, but there's no way he didn't pregame with Tyler. There's absolutely no way.
I think Tyler pregamed with everyone, to be honest.
I think as far as pregaming goes, I feel like if anyone did even just a tiny bit of pregaming, you can't be mad at someone for pregaming harder than you and for working out more for them than for you. Even if you just reached out to one person and were like, hey, are you going to be on this season? You can't be mad at coordinated Zoom calls because you broke the rules. Just because you only cheated on number 17, you can't be mad at someone writing the entire like answer key on their arm. Like, you both cheated. You just didn't do it, you know, full throttle. So if everyone pregamed a little, I can't be mad at someone for pregaming a lot. That's just my take.
I mean, I agree. And my opinion has always been, regardless of the extent of the pregaming, pregaming is a part of the game. Like, even if Cody had made a huge alliance or whatever it is, especially when talking about legacy in terms of like, how good is this player? Like, you cannot have Dr. Will in the pantheon, in the up, in the top, in top number two. If you're going to say Cody doesn't count because of pre-gaming, because Dr. Will, literally like the biggest pre-gamer of all time, cheated, saw the list of the cast, made pre-game deals to share money with people. Like this guy is the poster boy of pre-gaming. You know, if you're going to apply the argument, it does have to be applied, I think, equally here. So, again, though, in my opinion, the extent of the pre-gaming, based on what I've seen on the feeds, especially, and what like my read of it is, that I think him in Memphis, I think him and Nicole, probably had some contact with Tyler. And then I think he already knew Enzo, but Enzo has been very anti. I don't think Enzo pre-gamed with anyone, but I think they knew each other prior to it. And then, who else am I thinking of? I don't think he was in any contact with Danny based on the conversations that they've had. And based on how he saw her pregame, or how he saw her, in the start of the game. And then, you know, Bailey, I think, I'd be curious to know where Bailey's pregame was. She talked about, she was rumored to have had a pregame with Janelle. I think Janelle and Danny, I think Nicole and Danny, and possibly Bailey and Cody, but I'm not sure. Certainly Tyler and David, Tyler and Christmas. I think that's mostly, obviously Janelle and Kaser.
Yeah. I think that I subscribe to the same idea that Kemi brought up, where once everyone's pre-gaming, if someone does it better than the other person, I can't be mad about it. You know, like, good for you. It worked out. Again, not all the information's out there. I do want to say, and I'm not like a Cody defender by any means, but once the first wall yeller outs you to half the house and you're still able to control the game and do a good job about it, like, good for you, you know, good for you. It's kind of like a bit of an equalizer. It was an adversity plus. He's got to deal with a little bit of heat now. Then multiple wall yellers came. He starts yelling back at the wall yellers, which is hilarious. But I think that he's a bit of a dullard, kind of. His gameplay isn't like flashy and amazing. But he's slowly and steadily has taken over the game more and more. I didn't expect him to be in the position he's in at the start of the season. I thought someone like Tyler was going to be the person who was going to get this kind of stuff done and have the hold on the game by now. However, Cody has slowly but surely taken over and is quietly getting to the end without anyone really looking at him as a physical specimen. Not anyone looking at him like, hey, he's been at the end before. He's socially capable. Without anyone, like everyone, no one's really clocking it. So it's working for him. So I can't be mad about it. So I kind of get this legacy spot, especially because his biggest thing up until this point was the meme of, hey, he wins Final HOH and takes Derek to the end to lose. So the fact that he's doing this stuff without him is something to be said. Again, I know that no matter how we look at it, the pre-gaming will go down as a debate in this game and every other game that's ever existed. But from what I'm seeing, like, good on you. Good on you. You're doing the thing. I didn't expect you to do this. So,
yeah. And I think it also needs to be said that, like, pre-gaming only gets you so far. Just because you talked to someone prior to entering the house, like, those conversations mean less than conversations you're having in the house. It's the real thing is the relationships that people have prior to entering. So Danny and Nicole having a friendship prior to entering, that's a huge advantage. I don't know what the relationship was between Enzo and Cody, but they've at least met. But like, friendships, like long lasting relationships heading into the season, are the things that really, like, they stick. If you called someone or texted them prior to entering the game, like, that means as much as like one small, like, brush in the storage room, like, hey, let's watch out for each other. You know what I mean? So You know, pre-gaming only gets you so far in a game that lasts 3 months.
Especially when it's entry level right away, someone you haven't really spoken to. It's essentially trying to guarantee you're alive in the first week. That's what it is. The biggest thing. And like, it's honestly one of those, like, if I, just because you're shown the puzzle doesn't mean you can immediately do it. You still got to put the, find the pieces and put them together as you go along. Like, you can see the, how the puzzle's done all you want. Like, you still have to have the skill and the patience to slowly implement it more and more and more. So there, it takes skill. It takes skill to have information, have knowledge of things, and then still put them together. So.
Yeah. And the thing about it too, is that, like, these are things that, you like, again, everybody, again, in my opinion, you just want, pre-gaming is what equal is what levels the field. That when there are people that have pre-existing relationships, pre-gaming allows you to kind of make up for the lack of those relationships, because you can start to build things and you can get a better sense of who knows who and what kind of relationships already exist. So I actually, in a season of returning players, I actually would advocate for more pre-gaming so that these prior pre-existing relationships don't mean as much. But I certainly think that based on what we've seen on the feeds versus what we saw on the feeds in Big Brother 7, that there's significantly less pre-gaming this season than there was in the first All-Star season, which had an insane amount of pre-gaming.
I would have not, at the start of this Legacy Watch, bet that Cody was going to take the most talk time for us. But here we are. Here we are. Who would have thought, Cody? Ooh.
Yeah. All right. So, above Cody, we have, in the top tier, Enzo.
Okay.
I don't know how to successfully transition these people, but Enzo above Cody in the top tier. He just manages to crack the top tier. Enzo, for the first time, now a top tier contender.
Yo, I don't know why I wasn't there before, yo. What's going on? That's it. Like, what's happening here, Kemi?
I mean, yo, I definitely want him in the top tier, but I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I wanted him above Tyler, but he was the one that I was excited about. Like, I feel like Enzo's playing a flawless game. I feel like Enzo's playing a flawless game. I feel like Enzo is someone that you can easily root for. I feel like Enzo needs a spinoff. I feel like Enzo, you know, he's good in the DR. He's good with people. He's good at comps. He, you know, is going by unscathed. He is not someone that anyone will put up on the block. He, well, for the most part. And like, I just, what is, like, he's someone that I honestly, if Davon wasn't there, I wouldn't mind voting for him for AFP. I wouldn't mind. He's, can I curse on here?
Go for it. You've got an adequate warning.
Fucking hilarious. Like, he's so funny. I can't handle it. He's so funny.
Yes. Enzo, I think, really has, Enzo is one of the top sort of people moving up this season. In the preseason, Enzo was fourth to last on the list. Now, he was still middle tier, but he was only above Bailey, David, and Christmas. And over the course of the season, he has jumped all the way up to fourth place overall in the entire cast. So, big win here for Enzo this season, Booyah.
Very big one. I mean, I would like to think, I remember preseason, I was very excited to see Enzo back, Taryn, and somebody that I was on a stream on, I won't name names, but Marin Farmstrong was not into it. I was like,
I'm that Marin. Really,
that Marin, you know, Mr. Farmstrong. But here's the thing, Taryn. He still got it. Enzo still got it. We joked about him, you know, going in and doing the exact same thing. Low-key kind of started off that way. But I like seeing that he's involved in a lot more. He's tied into so many other side deals. And for weeks now, It's like, well, no matter who wins it, Enzo's not being looked at. Enzo's safe for another week and another week and another week. And on top of all this, he's also, you know, the one part of his game that he believed. I don't want to just say he believed that the big flaw, one flaw in his game was no comps. He couldn't win that final, you know, competition. He's got a couple under his belt now. He's, you know, he's not weak at them. He's shown that he's capable. And I do think that this is something that he's worked on. You know, he's, you know, he's, you know, come back, you know, built, you know, a little bit of, put a little bit of work in, and he's hilarious with the house. I feel like humor goes a long way. And he's a decent conversation. I do think because we've seen him enough, there's parts of him on the feeds that I'm a little bit exhausted of, but that doesn't mean that I still love 80% of the other stuff that he's saying. So he's someone that if I saw win at the end, not mad at it at all. I'm very into it, very excited about it. And we, you know, let's just see more about it. I think that despite him thinking that he would only be able to do like 5 minutes on a podcast, I think he's someone that could do 5 hours on a podcast, and he's definitely selling himself short. I look forward to that deep dive in the future. And I would not have expected top tier, ultimately. I think if he wins, let's talk top tier. But for now, entertainment-wise, legacy-wise, him coming out of 12, being kind of the forgotten person behind the Brittany Haynes, behind Hayden as the winners, as the winner, and then Brittany Haynes, he's earned it. He's earned the capability to come up here as one of the better social players in this season and in many different seasons.
Yeah, I will say it's he's flirting with the line here. He barely made it up. He could easily fall back down next week just on variance alone, I think. So he's just on the line here. And I will also say that I'm a little bit worried about Enzo, that it feels like he's running out of steam. That he has his energy levels have been. I talked about bathroom problems earlier in the podcast, that I think that's causing him some trouble as well. I don't know if maybe that's the main source of his problem. But he's had some difficulties getting the energy to like play the game. He's kind of coasting right now, and he's coasting well. He's in a great spot. He continues to be pulled into good things, but like, even those things, he's just like, sure, yo, that's it. Yeah, yo, that's it. And so I'm a little bit worried for him. And because I feel like this is part of the problem he had in 12 as well, is that by the end game, he was just kind of coasting and just kind of let the death happen. And so I'm a little bit worried, but he's in a really great spot. He showed some great ability in the first half of the game. So I'm hoping that this is just him coasting because he can, not because he doesn't have the energy to do anything else.
Right. I think the biggest test for him, because honestly, you are allowed complacency when your alliance is kind of ruling the house and you don't have to do much movement or try hard. But if these ripples happen and the divides start coming through in these next couple of weeks, and he has to kind of start repositioning to see, or like to like reassess the situation, if he snaps out of it, that's a good sign. If he doesn't, then it's a little bit of worry. But for now, either way, I think he's going to be able to coast a little bit more, whether or not he's doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. All right. So above Enzo is, in fact, Tyler, who has jumped up back up into the top tier above Enzo. He took a big hit last week with the, you know, after that quit stuff. But this week he's bounced back a little bit. Now, he used to be right on the tail of Janelle, right on the line of the Pantheon. No longer the case. This week he is just a bit into the top tier. He's still toward the bottom of the top tier points wise. But he has bounced back. I think staying last week, not being evicted on Danny's HOH, was good for him. His head seems to be back in the game. It seems like things are back pointing in the right direction for Tyler, but he seems to have still taken a bit of a hit here. I'm still not sure he can make Pantheon, but if he plays a really good game from here, wins the game, maybe it's in the cards, but that hit was still pretty big here, Cammie. How have you felt about Tyler?
You know what? Like, I really haven't been paying that much attention to Tyler. I feel like I shouldn't say that, but you know, whatever. I haven't really been paying that much attention to Tyler. It sucks that he, you know, wanted to go home and Christmas didn't send him home when, you know, she had someone literally in the palm of her hands. But I mean, I do get that because like, I don't care what you want. Like if you want to go home, I want to send someone home and then you can self evict. That's two birds, one stone. So, but as far as Tyler goes, you know, I think this is a good place for him. He's, you know, everyone should have won from season 20. And you know, if he does end up winning this season, I feel like, or even if he just gets to the final two, I feel like everyone would just give it to him. Cause it's like, you know, yes, he should have won, you know, he made it there a second time. And like, you know, if he made it there a second time, he deserves to be there. And like, he should have won the first time. Like, this is what we should give him. Plus I feel like, you know, production will probably have some PAs in the fucking, some PAs in the jury house, like, you know, steering it that way. So who knows, but I feel like this is a good placement for him. Honestly, like, I do think that he could get, you know, top tier. Not top tier, Pantheon
tier. Yes. I agree with you, too. I think jury-wise, I think he might, I think the biggest problem is that he tried to quit. And that he you know, brought up other social issues going beyond the house when he did so. I think that could be a reason that that somebody like Devon may not vote for him. But I think mostly other than that, and maybe even despite that, I do feel like he has a great chance to win a jury vote this season. And that's because I think in part because of Ian's campaign. Which is like the great your jury management is great when somebody else does it for you and you're on the block next to them. When Ian says Tyler is an amazing game player, if you don't get him out now, he's going to make the final two. I'm telling you, if you are that person and you make the final two, then you have that narrative is in people's heads of like, he shouldn't have gotten there. We knew he was so good from all the way back when Ian said so. And Ian came out of the house saying Tyler's playing the best game, Tyler and Cody. And each person that comes into the jury house is going to get an earful from Ian about like, I told you, you should have taken out Tyler. He's playing so well. And I think that's going to be good for Tyler, in a potential jury vote. So,
yeah, I feel like, you know, I'm someone who was a fan of Tyler in BB20. I would have hoped that he would win. He didn't. I think there were faults in the reason why he didn't, kind of took his foot off the gas. And then I was excited to see him back this season. I do think that I learned something about Tyler this season that I didn't know before. I think he's a lot more in love than I would have thought before. You know, because I see him as such a game player. I see him as someone who's kind of cerebral, who plays the game, really gives it all, is sly about it, is way more subtle than, you know, some of the players in the house right now. Probably the best game player in the house when we first got in the house day one. And then in a moment of weakness, kind of did what I think is more of a new school. Like, we have a brand, we have cookbooks, and we have a product. Tried to package it in the best way possible. And then didn't leave. But I will say, once he didn't leave, he did have a little bit of moment of like, well, if I'm not going to jury, that's not going to happen. Again, don't love that. Didn't love it with Ian. Didn't love it with him. I do think that the fact is he's someone who is not going to, like, as long as he's in the game now and he's not leaving, he's going to play. He's going to do the most. He's going to try and go for the gold. And I love that. And I still think that he is someone who is in the running for this. I think, you know, when he was on the heels of quitting, you mentioned it, Taryn, he was a top three contender. I think he's slowly going to be coming back up again. I think right now Cody might be firm number one seed. This is where Tyler works best, in the shadows, ready to make a strike happen, ready to get the troops ready. So I think he's capable of that. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. I do not like everything that happened that one week really took me down on him a couple pegs for a while. He's slowly going to bring it back now, I believe. So we'll have to see how that goes. But that being said, top tier, interesting spot here. But if you look at it from a, hey, Danny was supposed to be the person to take him out and didn't. Let's give some credit there for sure. But I think if in order to maintain the top tier, there's got to be a little more fixing of that quitting situation, because that, again, it does leave a bit of a bad taste in my mouth. But I do think that ultimately, you know, the whole romance aspect, again, played stronger to a player like him than I thought it would, because I rate him as such a high strategic player. So I didn't expect that of him.
Yeah. All right. Well, above Tyler is, of course, Kacer, who actually did take a bit of a hit this week. Last week, he was at an all-time high, just approaching the Pantheon this week, dropping back down toward the middle of the top tier, but still higher than Enzo and Tyler. And then, of course, you have Janelle still in the Pantheon, although she also took a little bit of a hit this week. Now toward the, she was like mid-Pantheon. Now she's like low Pantheon, but still pretty firmly in the Pantheon for Janelle and Kacer. Kemi, what was it like watching Janelle and Kacer? Did you see their original seasons?
I saw season 6. I haven't seen the first All-Stars, but I just loved Janelle. Like, I love the energy. I know she's like a veto, you know, queen, but I wasn't really... When I was watching these past seasons, it was before I went on. It was before, like, they were even casting for season 21. So I was just watching for entertainment. Like, I was watching as I was binging as I was watching season 20. So I was just watching for entertainment as fillers on, like, the 3 days of the week that they didn't play season 20. And I just love Janelle's energy. Like, I love the laugh. I love, like, the jeans being boot cut. Like, I just love the retro vibes. I just loved watching it. So I do need to go back and watch for the strategy and the comp wins. Maybe. I don't know if I want to give CBS the views. But, I'm but yeah, I love Janelle. And then just seeing, I like seeing the difference in, I feel like Kacer is kind of the same. Like, in his early season and this season, he just has, like, the same personality. But you can see the maturity and, like, the difference in personality with Janelle. So I just love seeing that. Like, it's nice to see.
I mean, Taryn, you're always going to catch me simping for Kacer. I love Kacer. And this today is no different. Since he's been out the house, it's been fun seeing Kacer become someone who's a social media presence. I've been enjoying that, seeing him on these Instagram lives with Janelle, having conversations, talking about the Ian stuff. I mean, again, he stays doing the same things that I've adored him for. And I'm very happy to see that we get more content from him outside the house, despite his experience on 22. So always, always loving Kacer. Give him the top tier. I think his legacy will stand the test of time. And then same thing with Janelle. You're never going to see Janelle fall down. I think Janelle is firmly in the Mount Rushmore of Big Brother at this point. I don't think there's much debate on it. The both of them, she put up her gold chain that said Janelle for charity. Today I saw that Kacer put his bag and his FBI hat. They're up for grabs.
Priya, do you know how much it's going for at the moment?
I mean, what, the chain went for 18K. Let's say that it's currently sitting at 9,784. I don't know why I went specific. I like to imagine that one day I'll get one of these right and I look like a genius. So let's see. But
does anybody in the chat know?
Anyone has the link.
What the hat is going for at the moment.
But no, I mean, they're just such an amazing duo. And I think that they represent a lot of, you know, that original, authentic, you know, camaraderie within the house. Two people that you would have never expected to become friends, to be such a, you know, incredible duo that just stand the test of time, and they can reunite after all these years within the house and still have the exact same connection. It was just beautiful to see. So that, their stuff outside the house, the way they are, all good. Chat saying 3,200.
Yeah, I just found it. It's on Janelle's eBay account. Yeah, $3,211 right now with 66 bids. Unfortunately, a little bit pricey for me. I don't think I'm going to be getting an FBI hat anytime soon.
If I get one, I'll pretend it's from Kacer, but I don't think I can afford the authentic experience. Definitely not. might be able to, if it was like, no, even a tenth of the price, I don't know if I could just shell that out randomly. Like, here's $300 for a hat that I'm going to ruin. Like, I don't think so.
Look, I spent like $30 on Orwell, who's now useless to me.
Yeah, right. So. This hat is, what, $9, and I'm using it real, like, this is working for me. So, yeah. Poor Orwell.
Right? As soon as I bought an Orwell, no more Orwell. That's
At all. I mean, it's maybe it's like an authentic piece. Maybe down the line, it'll become very rare and then you can make money to buy a case or FBI hat.
Who knows? There you go. All right. Well, that is the Legacy Watch. Looks like we're back at a perfect distribution here, symmetrical. And that's what we have for you on the Legacy Watch. Anything else that you guys want to talk about here before we wrap this up? Puya?
No, I'm good. There's no body stories for me. No nipples. No nipple watch is closed for today. The store's closed. We have no surveillance on any nipples. Everything's good to go. No, I just think that it's been an interesting day with the veto win and all the new ripples that are popping off. I'm intrigued to see what happens here. Obviously, we'll be very devastated if Davon is to go this week. It does look like it's leading to be that way. Which is unfortunate, but then we got to keep moving forward with the season. And the fact that there's a little bit more randomness coming into next week, I'm intrigued about. Shout out to my friend and yours, Amon Adwin. If you're watching this, man, I'm with you this week. I'll be keeping an eye on your Twitter and I'm sending you all the love and positivity because I know that he loves Davon and this is going to be a hard week for him if Davon goes.
I am seeing people want us to talk about the zings, but I actually don't know what they are yet. You guys might have more information than me since we've been podcasting for 2.5 hours now. I will give you guys the as many details on the zings as I can. And tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern, we're at the everything that happened today on the Big Brother 22 live feeds. Kemi, anything else you wanted to bring up here?
No, I was going to ask who's on your Big Brother Mount Rushmore, but then I just worked it out of my head. I don't know if you guys, I don't know. Cause I always forget about Dr. Will. Mm. And then, so I guess it would be Dr. Will, Janelle, Derek, and Dan, right? Those would be your four.
Would that be yours?
No,
she's asking for yours.
Oh, you think that's mine?
Yeah, I think that's yours.
I would not say that now.
Why? Derek? Are you taking out Derek?
I know you are. Kacer is on mine.
Yes.
Dan is on mine.
Okay.
I think that Danielle Reyes is on mine. And number four, who am I? Dr. Will. Probably.
Okay.
If I could choose a fifth, who would I want to add?
Yeah, who's on your basketball sized team of Mount Rushmore? Who's the fifth?
I can't think of one off the top of my head fast enough. Kemi. Kemi would be my fifth.
Oh, there you go. Okay. We got the five.
They're in there.
Oh, boy. Puya, what do you got? What do you got?
What would be on my Mount Rushmore? Yeah. We have very similar tastes. So in the interest of not having this, not saying same, I'll just keep Danielle Reyes and I'll keep Kacer and I'll leave off the two that would probably obviously be on the list. And then off the top, who am I going? You know, it's like, it's a hard pick. Are we just US, right? We're not talking Canada, just US.
Just US. Yeah.
Just US. You know, this is a hard assignment to do on the fly.
Yeah. But I tried to just, to anyone, mention, I tried to keep it to two-time players only.
Personally. Oh, two-time players only. Okay. That makes it a little bit easier. Yeah. Then I don't have to think about Johnny Mack or Eric Stein. Remove them off the list. That makes it easy. You know what? I'm willing to put Davon in the squad. I think Davon for me has given me so much and then some. Reality TV goodness. So I would put Davon in mine. And then let's see. You know what? I'm going to take a refund on what I said and I'm going to put Dr. Will in there.
I forgot Dr. Brittany.
Oh, I'm going to put Brittany. I'm not going to put Brittany. Dr. Will. I'm putting Brittany in there. There we go. That's my.
There's too many. Four is not enough. It's just not enough.
Oh, I'm really enjoying Brittany's recaps. Her little like dolls. Mm.
They're so good.
They're so good.
Yeah. And Rachel, there's too many people.
Ooh, I would, Brendan Viegas is number one on my list of someone I want to see come back to play again. And I was really hoping this would be the season, but it wasn't. So he'd be someone I would be thinking about too. Love Brendan.
All right. Well, that's what we have for you. Kemi, where can people find you? What are you up to?
So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Kisses Kemi. I am launching my own swimwear line on Wednesday, September 23rd, next week. And you can find that at Like Honey Swim on both Instagram and Twitter. So go check it out if you'd like. And yeah.
Can you tell me more about the, like, how did this come about?
So basically I've always wanted to start a swimwear line. Since probably 2018, and it's always just kind of been in the back of my mind. And then last year, after I got off the season, I just kind of wanted something that was completely mine. I spent like an embarrassing amount of years, probably like 5-6 years, wanting to go to law school. And then like I always had like the creativity itch in the back of my head. So I would just be like sketching things up while I was working as a paralegal. And I just decided to take the leap. So I'm excited.
Very cool. Pooya, where can people find you? What are you up to?
People can find me on all social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, Pooyaism for all of them. I do Twitch streams now. I'm doing a late night Friday night streams now. So that's been an incredible experience. Starting at 1 a.m. going on to like 2-3. Oh yeah. It's been a fun experience. I've been enjoying those. So you can check me out there. Also, as far as podcasting goes, outside of Puya Fridays with the Friday morning live feed updates, I am doing the Masked Singer podcast. That's back now. The season's starting Wednesday, September 23rd. So we did a preview that should be out somewhere now. Also, 90 Day Fiance, that recap is out there. I'm doing the season of Happily Ever After at the moment. The Other Way is on hiatus, but there's a lot to talk about. If I was to compare myself right now to someone stalking the Stockwatch, I would be week one BB20 Tyler. I'm at my peak. This is like, damn, Pooya, you're doing some good things. Life's good. Everything's good. The positivity is going through. So yeah, you can find me on those platforms. And thank you for tolerating some of my little ranties today. I've been feeling a little bit ranty today, but I appreciate the platform.
I appreciate the Pooya rants. All right. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. Thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. I will, of course, be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern, as I mentioned. And tomorrow night, we will be live to recap the Sunday night nomination episode of Big Brother 22. I think we're going to get the Wise Guys segment in that episode, right? Because it happened before nominations. So that should be fun. I guess depending on your definition of fun. That's what we have for you. So thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.